Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. I wanted to welcome two people that I love dearly. Of course, they've both been on the show many times. Of course, you all know Barry Laminack. Barry Laminack was formerly from ESPN. He does his show, Barry on Deck, every Monday through Friday from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. And of course, every Tuesday, yours truly joins him in the second hour at around 3:30. And of course, Dusty Rhodes. Dusty is a longtime guest on the show. Huge fan of Dusty. The everything's opening back up in Houston, right? The comedy scene is returning. Barry's looking to shoot his first ever comedy special. Dusty's back with Wheelhouse over at The Secret Group. Of course, they're reopening and doing shows left and right. Check that out at Secret Group. It's a great time to finally get out of the house. I got a little piece of news for you. The Whiskey Social is back under new partial ownership, under a new name. It's no longer the Houston Whiskey Social. It's just called the Whiskey Social. Tickets will go on sale at the end of the month. I'm so happy to have it back November 6th. Go to the website, HoustonWhiskeySocial.com. I have not said that website in so long. I hope it's accurate. Google Houston Whiskey Social. Go to our website. Subscribe to our newsletter. The tickets will go on sale at the end of the month. We'll be announcing it in a couple of days, probably even tomorrow morning. Well, for you guys, it'll already be announced because this airs Friday. But we just, God, it feels so good to be back. Everything is happening. Life is returning to normal. I couldn't be happier. I couldn't be a bigger fan. I wanted to give a quick shout out. Whiskey Neat is brought to you in part by Legent Bourbon, a first of its kind super premium bourbon that melds Kentucky distilling tradition with the wonderful, wonderful art form that is Japanese blending excellence. Legent is a perfectly balanced yet complex and layered whiskey with a bright, unexpectedly long finish. Order a bottle in your area via drizzly.com. That is DRIZLY.com. And please, guys, please drink smart. I also want to give a quick shout out to Amrut. I'm not quite sure. I think if you're in India, it's pronounced Amrut. I bounce back and forth between the pronunciation. Either way, you know that I'm a huge fan. Pardon my French. I don't know if I can cuss during an ad read, but I'm going to do it anyways. You ready? Prepare yourself. I freaking love Amrut Indian single malt whiskey. As you can see here, our local pick is still available in specs across the state of Texas. And of course, this year, International Wine and Spirits Competition gave Amrut Fusion 95 points. And as always, Amrut would like to thank our listeners specifically and only for being a part of its success. Huge fan of Amrut, couldn't be a bigger fan. I'm going to give a quick shout out to our friends over at Grayson Bourbon. Grayson is a brand new Texas bourbon, first black-owned Texas bourbon, aged at least 3 years, Texas blended bourbon whiskey. Couldn't be a bigger fan. Very happy to have it in the market. My buddy Nico Martini helped launch it, and he did a fantastic job. I could not be happier to see new brands popping up everywhere. So for those who are a fan of Gregarious Grump, we will be launching the cognac soon. The website should be up shortly. There's so much happening over the next 2 months. I'm excited to be with all of you. So without further ado, please join me, Barry Laminack, from Barry on Deck, Monday through Friday on YouTube, and of course, my friend Dusty Rhodes. Cheers. Let's start off the show, by the way, Barry, nice shirt.
Huh? Teacher's pet. Yeah.
What? Oh, yeah. Dang. I don't have one. No one ever gave me one.
I actually owe. Uh-huh. I owe something. I got something for Dusty, too, just for her.
Are you just going to pull something out? Is it one of your kids?
I got you a puppy.
It's right there. Got some whiskey shoes. There we go.
Nice.
Whiskey glass. There we go.
And a stapler. And a pin. I got you
a... No, it's because of a post I made about... sneakers being the new male midlife crisis purchase.
Yeah, and then she wanted
that hurts. That stung a little bit.
Yeah. And I ran by a few comics and they all said it was fire.
It was definitely funny. It was definitely funny. But then she wanted to act like it wasn't specifically meant for me.
It wasn't. Young one buys shoes all the time too. Like all of you, it's like all of my male friends at the same time are just like, check out these shoes, bro.
Well, I was buying shoes until I lost my job. So then now I just and now I just eat my feelings. So.
All right. So did you guys bring something to drink? I've got Legion.
Okay.
From Jim Beam, little Japanese American blended. Yeah. Oh, buddy, Balcony's Rumble Cask.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. I made this old fashioned. I left my bottle in the kitchen with the old Forrester Statesman.
Great bottle.
I also did bring. I have the Rolling Creek, as well as the Ben Milam.
Okay, go wrong, Ben Milam. Shout out to Blair Alt and the crew over at Milam and Green.
So I have like.
I don't have a fancy glass though. I forgot. I was gonna order one for the next time you invited me.
I just got these. I really love these. They're oil derricks. It's very.
Oh, that is dope. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
he gave me a fancy whiskey drinking glass and then I broke it.
He promptly broke.
I wish this was like Barry's show where we could get people to Venmo him to take shots.
We don't need to Venmo. I'll do shots.
Let's just like guess how many people would do that and then just have you take that many shots.
Right?
Well, listen, I'm so glad you're all here. I haven't seen Dusty in some time. Barry, I saw you about an hour ago. Thanks for having me on the show. Definitely check out Barry. Barry on Deck. Your name did say it, but it looks like you edited it. Every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 p.m. I know that because I'm on the show.
I'm going to be on soon. Tuesdays.
Nice.
I need to have you back, Dusty.
I just literally booked myself by saying that.
No, I need to have you back. You know, I stopped doing interviews for a while because I was like, you know, I feel like maybe I should try to do a solo show. Yeah. And then I started doing solo shows because booking was such a pain in the ass.
Yeah, dude, it's not
fun. But now I kind of like, I'm in this thing where I have standard guests. Like Tuesdays is Christopher Hart. Thursday I have a basketball guy. Friday I have Jerome Solomon from the Chronicle. And then I was like, Wednesdays I should just start booking guests again. Plus it makes it easier for me. I only have to do an hour on my own and then just bullshit. So we're gonna make it happen. I promise.
You just sold your show to everybody. It's me for an hour on my own and then I just bullshit. Check it out, everyone.
Yeah, I'm not very good at. Look, I'm not very good at that. Okay,
I'm sold.
It's a terrible show.
That should be the tagline for your joke on your shirt. Just me bullshitting.
Do we all have the same ring light? I'm seeing it in all in me and Dustin.
Oh yeah, no. I got mine when I had to online teach just so I could, you know, look hot for my kids.
I don't have my glasses. My glasses are in the other room because of the ring light. But I'll just do this.
I'll give a quick shout out. So the one I'm using is, God, it looks like a large pizza. Sagamore, which we've featured on the show before, I think on the Dolph Lundgren episode, Sagamore Rye is doing a cocktail competition live next Wednesday evening, I believe at 5 p.m. I can double check, but they're doing a cocktail competition. They're breaking it down by regions. So there's the West Coast Finals. The centralized location is happening next week, and yours truly is hosting.
That's fun.
I have a conference call with them tomorrow to try to figure out if maybe we do it as an episode of this show and kind of feature, it's weird. Like on my show, I feel extremely comfortable. On Barry's show, I feel very, very comfortable in myself. The idea of hosting a cocktail competition for someone else, though, terrifies me. And I don't know why it is.
You guys just have fun.
Yeah. And I probably have a few drinks before I get started, but I was listening to, I think, Jordan Peterson talk about public speaking. And I mean, you guys are both stand-up comics, right? Like you've got you both. I mean, Rudyard just hit 9-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Congrats, by the way.
9 years of basically standing up in front of who knows, could be 30 people, could be 100 people, could be all strangers, could be family, and it takes on a different tone, I think. I'm still trying to figure that side of my public speaking ability out, because I don't think
That's like the sliding scale for me for teaching too. Cause like when I'm in a class and like students are trying to like, they're mad or they're shitting on me, I'm like, you think I'm not used to this? You think I'm not used to standing in front of a room of people that fucking don't want to be here? Like that's my. And then, but what's weird is when I like teaching in front of students, like I'm totally comfortable. But if I'm asked to speak to staff, I'm like, ooh, good. This is like, I'm awful at it. That's why.
I fully recognize it's something in my own head that I need to break. I need to break that side of me, but I haven't quite figured out how to do it, you know?
Do you, when you do these, is it going to be Zoom? Are you going to be live?
So this one will be Zoom. It'll be YouTube live via the Sagamore. It's the whole basically anyone can submit a cocktail recipe. They pick some finalists and then they do a judging competition, and I'm hosting, co-hosting with April Burkholder from Sagamore, and we are basically going to go through the cocktails, make them live on camera, then have the judges.
So it's like YouTube
making all of the cocktails. It's not like you're like, and now we're going to cut it over to the West Coast for so and so from that bar.
There's going to be, I guess, three contestants and three judges and two hosts. And then you have the option, and I think at the very least, I think the judges and the hosts will be making each cocktail with the person who designed it and taste it and give our feedback and talk about it. Is it sweet? Is it balanced? Whatever the case might be. I'll
predict this, and this is why I asked you that question. I'll predict that within 7 minutes of starting the show, you will settle in and be good.
Yeah,
and you'll forget that you were hosting. You'll just be like, oh, we're just doing this.
Yeah. Until your dogs start having sex behind you live. And then you're going to be like, oh, Jesus, you'll be good. You'll be fine.
I only have one dog.
He only has one dog. So if it starts having sex with another one, that will be a surprise for him.
Or itself. That would be pretty dope, too.
But you're not doing that from home. You're doing that from the studio, right?
So we talked about it. I'll probably do it from right where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they sent this big pizza light for me to be well lit and stuff. And to be honest, I don't know if the shelving behind me can support two dogs having sex, but we'll see how the show goes.
That would be distracting.
Yeah.
Is that or toilet hot. Paper? Hmm? What's the white thing? Is that a candle?
Did you say, is that toilet paper?
It does look like it.
It does look like toilet paper.
It does. See?
For all his shitty takes. What? Vase? Yes.
Think.
What is it? A vase? I don't think that's a vase. I don't think that's.
What's
you should put something
term?
In that vase, or people's going to be like, "Is this like a pandemic post-party kind of thing going on?"
No. See, I put all the valuable things I have behind me. There's toilet paper here. these shoes are here. You know, it's pandemic. Toilet paper is a commodity. I think it's. I think my wife. And this is a totally boring story, but I'm going to tell it anyways. My wife, who is one of the most incredible cooks you've ever met, also has the opposite of a green thumb, a black thumb. She kills every plant. Can't keep plants alive. Mm-hmm. And recently she took a plant outside that had some sort of mold growing on it, some sort of fungus, and threw the plant away and then was like, well, I've got all this dirt left, so I'll just spread the dirt around onto every plant inside the house.
And they all got the fungus.
And a few weeks later, every plant in our house
is covered
in fungus. So I think that usually has something in it, but it doesn't.
I didn't know that the fungus comes from the soil. That's interesting. I would have thought it was an air thing too. I would have made the same mistake.
I think you can. What's the term? Poison the soil, or there's a word for that.
It's like cross contamination.
Yeah. The same thing happened with my ex-wife, except she was spreading her fungus to all the dudes she was sleeping with behind my back.
Ayo.
Ayo. All right. Well, that's
similar. Very similar.
That brings me to our first pour.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I am very happy to see you all for many reasons. One, Dusty, I invited you on today to talk about what you've got going on, your anniversary for Rudyard's 9 years, 9 long years. Does that mean that you've been doing stand-up for 9 years, or it's...
Yeah, it's weird because what's funny is I never really thought about that, but I did pretty much start doing comedy pretty close to when we started doing Ruds. And I remember like Joe Bates, the guy I started it with, would always like message me and be like, you know, he'd remind me of the anniversary, but there was like a stint in comedy where I was just saying that I had been doing comedy for like 4 years. And then Joe messaged me and was like, this will be the 7th year of Rudyards. And I was like, oh my God, I've been doing comedy for 7 years. And I literally the night before, I think, had said on stage that I've been doing comedy for 4. And I was just like, totally just like oblivious to like how long. I don't really keep up with anniversaries or dates like that. I've never been that person. Like, I always thought that like in a dating relationship, anniversaries are what you like hang over the person's head because you want to force them into marriage, you know? So that's like the only reason. So yeah, but no, it's been 9 years. So yeah, that's pretty much like, it's pretty much the same amount of time, because I think that like we started that mic not long after, like give or take 9 years. Yeah.
And I just want to point out something about the Ruds open mic. For those of you that don't know or have never been, shame on you. But as a comic, we look at that open mic. This is why it's been around for 9 years, is because as a comic, you look for a place to go do a show that's going to be similar to what you would do at a club or at a real, not just, you know, just a random bar, not those type of things. You're looking for, like, especially as a road comic, I'm looking for an audience that I know if I do these jokes and they work at Ruds, they're going to work no matter where I go. That's the beauty of that open mic. It's the most real comedy crowd, because a lot of time open mics are just, they're basically hostages. They were at the bar, somebody starts an open mic and they're like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Yeah, like, why now we people have to endure this.
But it's a legit, I mean, it's almost a shame to call it an open mic, because it's everybody that goes there for the most part are established comics that are working on already good material that they're making. It's a
one there.
Yeah, it's no wonder it's been around for 9 years. The crowds are amazing. The comics are great. And Dusty runs an impeccable room. There's no bullshit that's going to happen in there. It's amazing. Except the time. Do you remember the time the lady
Bullshit happened. Like, bullshit still happens just like it would at a club, but less likely now, because I think, you know.
My favorite Ruds moment was when the you were there, I think. There was a lady that got like shithouse drunk, and Rob Mungle was hosting, and he called her the C word.
Oh, wow. That probably wasn't
a joke. And he said the C word in a joke, and she was drunk and said, you can't do that. And she started heckling.
That's years. That was a long time ago. Yeah.
So he said, move on. He brings up another comic. She heckled that comic. He comes back on stage and he was like, whoa, speaking of the C word, you just keep acting like one. And she reared back with a full glass ice and alcohol.
I do remember this, and she threw it at him.
And he dodged that shit like a Matrix. Whoop! And it hit the back wall and exploded.
I remember somebody running downstairs and they're like, Dusty, someone just threw a drink at Rob. And I was like, oh, great.
I was next, right? And I'm kind of new still. And I don't know, like, I don't do crowd work. I go up, I do my jokes, good or bad, and then I fucking go home, right? Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck? So I grabbed the lady, walked her out. He brings me up, and I just, this will tell you how inexperienced I was. I just do jokes. I don't acknowledge what just happened. I was just like, so, you ever ate so much? It's like, what?
That's a good strategy. Like, sometimes it's like, people are like, yeah, okay, we'll just.
Now, I would have spent a full 5 minutes talking about it, right? But back then, I was just like, all I knew was go up, do your jokes. So I just went up and did my jokes. I get off stage, and of course, nobody's laughing because the whole room is above. Was about Mungle dodging.
Like, that woman just threw her drink, and that guy called her. Oh God.
Zach Dixon goes up right after me. I get off stage. Rob Mungle's like, "Your next comic, Zach Dixon." He walks up and he just stands there and he goes, "Sorry about my mom." Oh my God! And it murdered. So and that good. Is exact. He should have went before me, because I was like, there would have been no better way to handle that.
It was so funny.
But that was a good lesson for me in comedy. Like, you got to acknowledge what happens in
you
the room.
Do something. Yeah,
I was all right, I didn't do it. But this is, again, why you have these kinds of shows. Is I became a better comic from that, just being around. Right. I was like, oh, okay. Got to say something.
I'm at the point now, at least as a fan of comedy, that whenever these moments happen, you're anticipating the cringe. You're anticipating the confrontation between the comic on stage. You're hoping they let it go and then it stops, but then they keep going and you're like, God damn it, here we go. And as a fan of comedy, it can either be brilliantly hilarious and taken care of, like quelled. David Lucas, yeah, who is a fantastic comic. David Lucas was here this past couple weekends ago with Shab. He tore into this white lady, and he did it in a way that still kept the energy going.
Right. That's a hard balance to strike.
It's extremely hard.
I usually try to maybe sort of acknowledge it and then just ask them to be quiet and move on. But like, especially being a teacher, there's so many easy ways for me to just like address a heckler in the context of being a teacher and then move on from it. I think you kind of like, as a comic, choose your lane when it comes to that. And you're like, this is how I'm going to handle it. But that doesn't always work. Like,
no. And TJ Miller, who I think is actually, he considers himself a vaudevillian type comedian. You know, he does some juggling and stuff. Fantastic. But his confrontation of the crowd is savage, is absolutely awkward and brutal, and is dragged out way too long. And you're really wanting to get back to the chuckles. But he like makes sure that time stands still long enough to eviscerate this person and make them want to slip, like, not to the point that, hey, tell the improv, you know, tell Jessica and her crew to remove the guy, but make him want to leave because he's so embarrassed.
Right.
That he's like, no, I get it. I won't say anything else. And it's difficult. It's difficult to do well. It's difficult to keep the energy going, but somehow, you know,
there's an art to it. There is an art to handling, because every situation is different too, right? You may have somebody that thinks they're helping the show, so they're just, they're yelling things out, but it's not in a mean way, but it's still distracting to you right, on stage and the crowd. And then there's the ones that are trying to be funny and be assholes. There's the mean ones. There's the loud talkers. I was a couple weeks ago, I was in Corpus Christi, and this couple was next to the stage, and I could just hear this lady going, why, like 1,000 times. And I'm in the middle of a joke, and I was like, I'm just going to finish the joke and then acknowledge it. Which is, yeah. So I just like, what's going on? Why are you? She goes, oh, I didn't know you could hear me. I was like, what? You're sitting right here.
Then
I was like, well, what happened? She goes, we're getting a divorce. I was like, just now? She goes, yes. Yeah. I was like, oh, well, fuck, this is amazing. I pulled
That's
up a chair.
Amazing.
Yeah,
that is amazing. Oh,
they literally got divorced during my set. It was she found out he cheated on her, right? His phone lit up, and it was his side bitch that messaged him, and she was like, what the fuck? And so that's why she started yelling why, and oh my God, I milked it.
Wow.
It was amazing. Dude, he was crying, you know, at the end.
That's,
I was like,
actually, well, that's a lesson in dinner etiquette. You should always turn your phone upside down when you're eating.
You know, put it in your pocket if you're cheating, right? Yeah, great point.
Especially if you're eating dinner with the woman you're cheating on. Put that phone upside down, dude.
At the end, I said, was it worth it? He's like, what do you think? He was literally crying. Oh, my God. Well, I was like, thank you, Comedy Jesus. I just spent 10 minutes. Yeah. It was the best. But to your point, Chris, when I was done, I didn't know how to go back into my material. I was like, where do you go from here? I literally said that. I was like,
segue to that.
So I'm fat. I don't know what to do.
Anybody here have marriages that work?
I did say that at one point. I was like, boy, if y'all are getting divorced right now, you're going to hate my last 20 minutes. It's just me talking about how happy I am being married. That's weird.
So the whole reason I brought up the entire conversation was that you have brought back your game night. I want you to talk about that.
Oh, Wheelhouse.
Secret Group's opening back up, and mm-hmm. they're going full force. I mean, literally making, I mean.
I'm going to be there tonight doing Zahid's birthday Trash Flavored Trash show.
Andrew announced that they're going to be announcing about a billion shows coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are back in full swing. So when's your show, Dusty? Okay. How often
does
it happen?
Wheelhouse is the first Saturday of every month. Actually, thought I was going to have to cancel the next one, but then because I'm going to Austin to do Sure Thing, not only to headline the show, but then also to re-talk about my album recording. So that'll be fun. But Wheelhouse is the first Saturday of every month. And so it's like Barry's been on it. It's like a comedy game show. Our grand old big wheel was broken, and that brought so much sadness to me because I felt like it was another contestant on the show, if you will. But we still have the wheel, a wheel. But basically, like, the comic spins the wheel, and they have to do, like, different challenges that range from having to eat peanut butter or stuff your mouth full of marshmallows.
I had to do the marshmallow one.
Yeah.
And that's why I got fat, by the way.
It was just that.
I was fine before.
Kicked off his marshmallow addiction.
That's exactly it. Getting shot at by Nerf guns, which is so funny because, like, every time one of the comics, Rich Williams, is on the show, he gets that challenge. And he always makes a joke because in real life, he was involved in a shootout. So I'm like, oh, my God, am I just, like, putting someone through emotional distress? There's another challenge where you have to do, like, different, like, me telling you, like, basically I'm your personal trainer and telling you to do, like, jumping jacks or high knees or high
kicks. Done that one. Coach, yeah, right? Is the coach, what is it?
Yeah. Coach Banks. Yeah. And then, there's my favorite, cause it's the creepiest, but it's the funniest. And it's where the comic has to brush someone's hair as they do their set. I've been trying to find a challenge that's that awkward. Like, you know what I mean? Cause the only thing that could be more awkward or weird would be giving them a massage, and I'm just not going to make a comic go there. But, like, the brushing the hair, cause it's always a dude, and it's just funny to watch them just sometimes just figure it out. Cause they don't know how to do it. It's funny and awkward. And yeah, but there's one called catchphrase where the audience, like, I'll start and I'll, like, basically pull the audience. And I'm like, at the end of every punchline, the comic has to say whatever catchphrase you guys yell out that I like. And my favorite one of these was Zahid. Debji was doing it. And immediately, like, I said it and this girl yells out from, I was like, I need a catchphrase for him to end all his punchlines with. And this girl yells out from the back, I'm a dumb face. And, like, Zahid had to do. And Zahid, of course, is so good because he just, like, leans into it. So he, like, pauses at the end of all his jokes and goes, and I'm a dumb face, but it was so funny. One, and then Katie McGee got the challenge. It's called Turn Around, where basically you just have to do your audience to the wall instead of to the audience, like do your set to the wall instead of the audience. Katie starts her set, turns around, immediately leans into the wall, and she goes, so, you guys fucking? So those are two of, like, my favorite moments. It was, like, so natural. It was so funny.
Zahid is one of the most, I've got to work with him behind the scenes. For those who don't know, we launched Gregarious Grump in the fall of last year in September, but we never actually set up a website and, like, you know, we're a little behind on some things. And Zahid and I have been working together behind the scenes. And of course, I follow him on all social media. The dude seems to be killing it. He's been doing a lot.
Yeah, he's rocking it right now. Yeah.
Dude, I couldn't be happier for him.
Such a great guy.
It's crazy. He is such a nice dude. And when I first met him, I didn't know how to take it because you meet guys that are so nice that you're like, okay.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah. Yeah,
and there was, we had a talk because I didn't think he liked me. He didn't think I liked him. And it was one of those things, you know, how Dusty, the comedy scene.
I mean,
scene.
It's really easy for people to know that I don't like them, but not as easy as other people to know.
We had a talk. I was like, he's such a good dude. Like, he's such
He is.
It's one of those guys you want to see win. Like, you just, I hope this dude wins. I hope he figures it out. And I hope it all happens for him. He's just a good dude, man.
He's a solid people. Yeah.
And Barry was invited on today because, speaking of recording albums, Barry has committed, put out on social media, you put it out there to the world, that this year you will record your first album.
Yes. Yeah. I 2 years ago, and was maybe it was 2018, 2019, a couple of my buddies that had record deals with 800 Pound Gorilla, which included Jerry Rocha, John Westling, and Billy D. Washington, all kind of put in a good word for me with those folks and introduced me. And I sent a tape and they were like, let's do this. So got a record deal with 800 Pound Gorilla. Super pumped because it means they can get you an XM satellite and, you know, it could be a good thing. So then they have this influx of people. So they're like, hey, we know you wanted to get your project out this year. So if you want to do it without us, that's fine, but we can't get to you until next year. I was like, oh, no problem. I'd rather wait, do the XM satellite thing. Well, then that turns around. They just keep waiting and waiting. Then the pandemic hits and it was like, okay, well, this is just like, it literally was almost 2+ years where I said I wanted to do it. And it just hadn't happened. And then I've come up with other reasons not to do it. And I was like, finally, I just need to put it out and just everybody hold me accountable. I'm just going to say, all right, August or September of this year, I'm doing it. I'll find a spot. Right. I'll record it. I have the material. I mean, I've already been, since we've been back, I've been, all right, this is my set. Whatever jokes I do is going to be from this set because this is what I need to polish.
Right. So, exactly. Yeah.
Have you considered, and I'm just throwing this out here, have you considered pitching Barry on Deck to 800 Pound Gorilla for XM?
I have not, no. But I don't think they're a record label. But I don't know. I don't know.
As soon as you said XM radio, I'm thinking of sports radio and sports.
Oh, trust me. I would love that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, you know, maybe you do both. Finish the album.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They see the album. They see it's amazing. They see the potential. Then you're like, yo, I got this other thing I'm working on, Barry on Deck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we actually have plans this Friday to go by a potential venue, which this venue has three rooms, right? They've got a room that could fit a couple hundred, a room that could fit like 900, and a room that could fit 400.
Is this the place where you do the social?
I mean, spoiler alert, yes.
Oh, well, we can edit that out.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, so the social has got potential, and I've been wanting to book comedy gigs there for a couple of, you know, I think you and I've talked about.
What's the update on the whiskey social? Are you leaving that in the pocket too?
What a great question. We are about to announce it any day now. In fact, by the time this episode airs, I think the email will already go out. November 6th. Yay. Saturday, okay. November 6th.
I'm super close to my birthday. Hmm.
The only thing we have competing against that is it's opening weekend of hunting season, which is not really something I give a shit about, but I think some other people might.
Oh, judging by the Houston Bourbon Society, I would say that lots of people.
Was that a gun reference? January or February, the Houston Agave Social is coming. So we are currently slated to put tickets on sale for the Whiskey Social by the end of this month. So, you're expecting at least 1,700 people. We are moving we're potentially moving the food out, but we're also we're renting these luxury bathrooms. One of the problems we had, have you been to one yet, Dusty, or no?
Yeah, I was at the last one.
Yeah, so that one, the problem we had there that was probably the biggest red flag was the lines to the bathroom.
Okay.
So
for an event that's mostly drinking, that would be problematic.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
A liquid based event needs bathrooms. Yeah.
I got you. Boy, I'm about to throw my drink at you. for those paying attention, that's called a callback. We've been doing this 6 years and we've never had a bathroom issue, but last year
last year was like, right. It was like really big last year.
It was only 200 people more than it was the year before, but we doubled the amount of water at the event and we really pushed water. And there's a side effect of drinking lots of water that I don't know if you're aware of, but it's that there's not enough bathrooms. That's what.
Hey, but you know what? On the upside, it proves that your push for water was effective.
Yep. And we had the least amount of inebriation, you're always going to have a couple.
Can you tell us that? That's a great story. What year did you have the worst incident of inebriation?
I'll tell that story. One lady. So I'll let you guess. Let's play a game. Guess the race. Okay. Guess the race and
white.
You win.
Exactly.
There was an older, and I think I've told this story on the show before, but there was an older couple. This woman was, a couple days out of stomach surgery. She had a cosmetic procedure to reduce the amount, something with her stomach.
Oh yeah, like a band put around it or something like that. I got
she
you.
Yep. She wasn't morbidly obese or anything, but
she was just vain.
It was something. It was like a tummy tuck or something, but you're not supposed to be drinking. But they had already bought tickets and they're like, well, we're gonna go. So she collapsed within the first hour at the event in front of a table, and we had to literally physically pick her up and carry her off the floor, and people are pulling out their phones for pictures, and one person like pulled you have signage, like what do you call them, D stands, whatever signage,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brands. Someone like pulled this whiskey, I won't say the name of the whiskey brand, but pulled their logo in front of her body. And I was like, no, stop.
Terrible,
like,
branding. Oh,
that's they finally get her out of there, and Chris comes back and he goes, sorry about my mom.
Yeah. I guess she just couldn't. Sorry about my mom. So good. That's way better than my joke. Dang it.
I was trying to.
I had a stupid pun.
You know, people were like, well, should we call an ambulance? And I was like, no. I was like,
that's stressful though, because you don't want that on back on the event. Like, ugh, oh, God. Dude.
They were in their 60s. They were elderly. She said, I was trying to get her attention. Like,
it's a little late to be getting the tummy done in your 60s, right? Like, your best days are behind you. What does it matter at that point?
My thing, though, is also, I'm like, you're married. Why do you care anymore? Like, yeah. You're lucky. I would love to stop. Once I get married, I'm like, hey, this is all going to shit. I'm sorry, dude.
I was 150 when I met my wife. I'm 150. This is 220.
I'm 240.
Just pure flab.
I'm 240.
My mom is a cancer survivor. I remember when she got cancer. At first, she'd be like, look at how much weight I'm losing. I'm like, this is not a weight loss plan, woman. Like, you need to
this
eat.
Is not okay.
Stop. And, but then now she's like, I need to lose some weight too. And I'm like, mom, why? You're married. Dad's crazy about you. He'd love you if you look like dad. Like, he doesn't care. Like,
Dustin,
by the way, I'm cracking open the Bin Milam. And I have a little Bin Milam glass that I got from. That's when I was at the Whiskey Social.
Green.
When I was at the Whiskey Social, yeah.
Yeah. My buddy Zuka, who Dusty knows, right before the pandemic, he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 3.
That sucks.
Yeah, it's horrible. And he's 35, you know. So he lost all this weight. And he was like, I mean, on the upside, I look great. And he's past it now. So you go through, I guess, 5 or 7 treatments of, like, really intense chemo. And then you're pretty much in the clear. Then there's like this maintenance chemo, and he rebounded fantastically. Like he invited me to a bar one night to celebrate, and he had put on probably 50 pounds.
Nice.
Not morbidly obese, but he had dropped so much weight from the chemo.
Oh yeah. You dropped. So yeah.
That he was like, there's pros and cons to being cancer free. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, the pro, I'm cancer free. Con, I'm a fat ass again. And like, he had just,
He's never fat, though.
He is now.
Wow. Good friend. Good friend alert. Doot.
So I was trying to get her attention, by the way. So she's passed out, and her husband's like, oh, she's fine. She just had stomach surgery. And I was like, no, she's not fine. This is officially a scene. You're making a scene. And this was 3 years ago, by the way. So we haven't had a situation like this in a while. But I was like, I got to figure out who they are so that I can ban them in the future. And I was like, so, do you know your name? She's like, I'll just say this, Ashley, what's your last name? What's your husband's name? And so the next year when tickets went on sale,
you son of a
jerk. The
next year when tickets went on sale, we immediately refunded them and sent them an email letting them know they weren't welcome at the event anymore. Like, well, we have to. It's a complete liability.
That's real. Yeah.
It's not my fault, let's be honest. The fact that you're making me do this is your fault.
That's such a teacher thing. I feel that way. Like when students do stuff that they know you shouldn't be doing. And I'm like, I don't want to waste my life doing this stuff. Like, could you just be good? Like, this is like, you know what I mean? It's just like, you're just giving me extra work. That's why I'm mad. I'm not mad at you. Like,
it's the same thing as a parent. Raising our girls, we would always have a conversation before they were punished. We'd always sit down and we would talk about it. And yeah. I'm the fun dad. I'm the silly dad. I'm the goofy dad. But now you're making me have to do something because of your behavior.
Yeah.
So we would have them process, like, what's coming next is 100% your fault. I don't want to do it. But if I don't beat this out of you, no, I don't say that. I'm just kidding.
Whoa. This has been Parenting Tips with Chris Hart.
What I'm saying is if I don't raise you right, then I'm a bad parent. Like, so I
get that.
I have
that
to punish you.
That is so much behind the philosophy of when I started Ruds. And like, I remember having this conversation with Bob Biggerstaff, like early on, and like comics would show up and miss their spot. Yeah. And I would say, you don't get your spot, or they would show up late, or, whatever would happen. And they would get so mad. And Bob's like, you're just holding them accountable for whatever they want if they get booked in a comedy gig. Like, if you know your spot, make your spot on time. And if you can't do that, why are you in comedy? You know what I mean? Like, But it was just like, but a lot of things people did that they were just like, oh, Dusty's just trying to, I'm like, I'm just trying. Like, it's the teacher in me where I'm like, you're facing a consequence for the thing that you did. And now I bet, oh, you were never, ever late or missed your spot again. You know what I mean? Because in the beginning I was more lenient about that. And it was like, nobody was showing up on time and things were getting, and it was like a lot of stress for me. But then
I got moved up.
Yeah. Right.
Cause you used to, it's how it used to work, Christopher. You used to be on the alternate list. If you sucked and you were new, like me, she would put you on the, if somebody doesn't show, you can go up. And I was happy with that. I'm like, hey, I'm on the list. I'm in the building.
But that's the other part of it that I was like, this is like, when I look at the list of like comics, like now who like are successful and have done it. Like I think about when I first got added to the secret group, like the secret, like the Facebook group.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know what it was at first. Like I got added to it and I was like, what is it? And I'm scrolling through it, trying to figure out what group am I in. And there's a post from Zahid that said, got rejected for a second week at Rudd's. Guess I'm just going to go home and kill myself and wait for next week or something like that. Like, but it was the thing is like Zahid, Joffer, like none of them ever like complained. They were like, I just want to go up and do my set. And they kept getting better and they kept going up. And then they were in, you know, they like, they moved out.
I started as an alternate. Somebody didn't show up at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I would go up at 1 o'clock in the morning or however late it was. And then you happened to catch a couple and she was like, oh yeah, you can put me on the list. That would be the last comic on the list. But now I'm on the list. I got a spot. I'm not an alternate. And then the better I like did, the more traction I got, the slower so I moved up the list. And, you know, it's just, that's how it works. That's always how comedy should work.
Yeah, it basically was like a visual, like approximation, like people moving up the list is like how it works in comedy. You get better spots and better shows as you get better, just like at Rudd's. And I was like, I'm just doing this because it makes the show better too in the long run. Like if I stack, if at the beginning, and I do like to put a lot, some new comics in because I have gotten feedback in recent years about how some people are like, sometimes I like to go and see like the shitty comic that bombs. You know what I mean? Like that is sort of like a thing about, it's like the NASCAR crash. Just
called me by name.
Like, exactly.
What she meant to say is she likes to go see Barry perform.
Exactly.
I like watching Barry set.
But every now and then I'll throw up like a comic that I maybe don't know anything about. And sometimes it's great. Like they're, you know, they're good, or at least they have good energy. And then sometimes they bomb and it's like, that was a bomb. And maybe the next time it goes up and like makes fun of them or doesn't, you know, but it's like part of the show. It is part of an open mic, but it was more so the show was structured to keep audiences there so that they wouldn't leave because they're just like, okay, this is the fifth comic that sucks. I don't want to watch any more of this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There is an art to an open mic list. Make no mistake about it.
That's why I'm just like, exactly. And well, that was the thing. The reason I started the email sign up is like waiting in line. Like David Sedaris in one of his books had this quote is like, when people have to wait in a line, they feel like they're not living in a democracy. I also feel that it was just like dudes would like the open mic would start at 9 and dudes would be like, I got here at 4. I got here at 5 to sign up. And I'm like, stop doing that. Like, live your life. But then it was also like they would get into arguments about who was there first. And I was just like, I don't like making people wait in a line. That to me is something that someone that wants power does. So they look at, you know what I mean? But now I'm like, you just got to send an email.
Does the type of email they send you matter, Dusty, when they send you an email? Because I used to try to be super creative. Remember, I would send
yours were really funny. You wrote, I still have that one saved when you wrote me, like, what was it, the long Christmas? Was that you did 'Twas the Night Before Christmas?
I think, Yeah. Was the night before Rudd's or something like that. Yeah, like, I would try to be creative.
Scotty Peterson one time wrote me a letter as if he was a Civil War hero about to die.
That was me.
That was you.
Okay. That was me too. Yeah. I'm telling you, every week I would have a new theme to send to Dusty to get on the list.
Would do it, but most of the time it's just like send your name. But I can notice if like someone starts writing something that's weird, because sometimes I'll have people that are true, like write stuff that's truly weird. And I'm like, thank you for writing this weird email. It definitely lets me know you should probably not go up at Rudd's.
You're
like,
definitely not going up.
Yeah. You are clearly psycho. But then sometimes I feel bad because they're like, oh, I put in the email. I try to read the email just to make sure, because sometimes people are like, I don't get off work until 10.
Yeah, can you put me at the back half?
I can't go up until later or whatever, but
What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen at your open mic? Sorry, Chris, I'm not trying to.
Oh, wait, hold just, that, did just, you not hear? Did you not see what unfolded at open mic a couple of weeks ago?
No.
So there was this guy, I don't know who he is. Apparently other people know who he is, because he also messaged Brian Gendron, who does the riot up at Rudd's. But he sends me this email. He signed up and said some weird stuff. And I was like, okay, not putting on the list. And then he shows up to Rudd's, but I didn't know it was him because he was wearing women's clothing and he was wearing this like a mask. And it looked like a mask. It almost looked like, you know, when your friends like put on like on Instagram or Facebook that they're doing some sort of facial treatment, and it's like that light mask that just has like a hole in the mouth,
like, and tissue,
the
paper.
Eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's what he was wearing. And he sat in the front row, but he was dressed as a woman, and he was wearing sort of like goth, like girl, but he had like the high stockings on and like suspenders and a skirt, you know, kind of outfit.
Hot,
yeah. Very hot. But he sat in the like literally in front of the stage and just kept like rocking back and forth. So of course, no one that came to see, everybody was sitting like way in the back of the room. And like, but my favorite thing about it was, one, George Brito was hosting that night. Like, who better to interact with this person than George Brito? And it was like perfect. And he stayed for like a couple of comments. Everybody's like, Dusty, when do you want to go up? And I'm like, that guy's going to like knife me. But I didn't know who it was. I was just like, no one else is terrified. Like, I would be so, but then he ends up leaving and messaging me about, and he was shitting on some comic from Austin that had just done the riot and was like, why would you put me on stage if you put that clown on stage? And I'm like, I didn't even book that show. Like, that's not me. Like,
right.
You have your Rudyard people confused. But it was so like, that was so weird. Like, and then there used to be this dude that would come up at the end of the show and he would buy the entire crowd a shot if he could go up, and he would wear a trench coat. His name was Sean Varbury.
That's expensive.
And he would just like ramble. But it almost sound like one of the challenges from Wheelhouse actually was inspired by me remembering him, because he would tell his jokes like he thought he was leading a revolution, you know. And that's one of the challenges on Wheelhouse is, are you with me? And basically people have to tell their jokes like they're starting, like they're, you know, like a, like trying
that
to
scene
start a
what's that, Jerry Maguire, when he's like, who's coming with
me? Coming with me, buddy. He's like, yeah. Like Michael Day-Day did it one time and just kept, he was like, we need to stop dating these white women. Everybody's like, yeah. Like, but it's like, but he used to tell his jokes just like that naturally. And sometimes the audience was like, just would like humor him and go into it. And sometimes they would just stand back, but mostly everybody was like, well, I got a free shot. Yeah. I think those two things. And then when Dave Chappelle just randomly showed up at my open mic was probably the craziest
thing. That's pretty dope. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Weirdest thing I ever saw at an open mic was, it was at the Joke Joint open mic, surprise. And this dude shows up with a stuffed animal, a bear, that he had cut all the stuffing out of and put on his head. And he had, in the bear's nipples on his chest, he had cut eye holes. So he's wearing a stuffed animal bear on his head with the little legs and the arms are coming out of his head, and he can see through the bear's teats. And he goes on, I still have a picture. I could probably find it for the show notes.
He goes on stage
and does 3 minutes of material and never one time acknowledges the bear on his head. It wasn't a bit.
He was just like, this is me.
Like,
I Come and Take It.
You gotta say something about it.
You have to. But that's what's great. Like, Chase DeRusso one time at Come and Take It went on stage, and right before he went on stage, he grabbed his girlfriend's chihuahua, stuffed it in the front of his jacket, and went on stage with this like small dog head, just looking at the audience, and just did his set as if he did not have a small dog head like in
Chase.
His jacket.
Just
and
ignoring it.
It was so funny.
I love Chase.
That's so Chase. Yeah.
God, he is so funny.
Yeah. He's so funny. And just like fun. Like, he's just like, Chase is always the person that, like, I was standing back and like, there was a comic that I always really liked, and he was at Rudyard's one night. And I, like, for the last couple of weeks I had seen him, I was like, I just don't like him anymore. Like, as a comic. And he was a great guy, but I was like, he's just not really funny anymore. I don't really get it.
I'm right here.
So Chase and she, yeah, exactly. But Chase and I were watching him, and Chase looked at me and he goes, he's not having fun anymore. And I was like, and that's something that, like, I step back a lot of times. Like, when I think either like stuff isn't working for me, or I'm evaluating like how I feel about my jokes, or evaluating my presence on stage. And I have to ask myself, like, were you having fun? Like, what else was going on? You know what I mean? Like, it's a thing where I'm just like, sometimes, like, Zaha and I talked about this a lot, especially during the pandemic. Of like the pandemic teaching me to stop taking every fucking show and like take shows that you want. Because like what was happening is I was just like run down because I was on everything all the time. And it's like, after a while, it's not fun. But also like I stopped having friends in the sense of like all my friends were people who did comedy, but sometimes they were also people that in my mind, I was like, oh, well, there's someone who could get a show instead of me. And I didn't want to be in that mindset at all. Like, I didn't want to think that way. Like, but it was just from doing comedy so much. And finally, like, when I stepped away from it, and now I'm like really cognizant of it, because Zaha and I talk about it like all the time, about just like backing off and saying, like, is this show in the long run like worth it?
Worth it. Yeah.
Because I don't like, now I'm at a point where I don't need to get on stage every opportunity I have. Like, I can step back and write more and think more, because it's like you, Barry, like when you're writing stuff, like sometimes now it's like, yeah, I want to test out this joke, but I already know this is a good joke. Yeah. And sometimes it may not be, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like this different, it's different when you're like 7, 8, 9 years in than when you were like 1 or 2 years in and you were writing a whole bunch of
jokes. Literally just had that conversation. Myself, Chris Rogers, Kanice, Nana, and Sun Tran had lunch on Sunday. And we were talking about writing, and those guys are volume writers. And I feel bad. I'm like, I'm not a volume writer. Mm-mm. I write a joke once every 2 months. But the thing is I don't have to write any other jokes, because when that joke comes to me and I figure out what that joke needs to be, when however that happens, I don't know how, like, I'm usually observational, right, in my relationships or out in the world. But when I go, okay, this is going to be a joke, rarely does it not work.
Right.
I just don't sit down and just write and just get all the bad. I used to.
So you, and you go through,
I'm
those,
like, oh, this is a joke. And then it becomes a joke, and it's 3 minutes in my set. Yeah.
Yeah. But the downside of that too, do you find, is like, sometimes you feel like you go for a long time and you're like, fuck, I have to.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, like a thief in the night, a joke is just in you and you're like, oh, well, this is it. Like, this is the next thing I'm going to work on. But it's like, that's what people don't understand. It's like, I'm going to do this joke probably for the next 2 months every time I'm on stage. But it's because I am not one of those comics who's like, I'm going to have a new joke every week. And I'm just like, I just don't, that's not how I write. If you want to write that way. And that system works for you. But for me, I'm like, it doesn't make sense, because once I have something, I want to play with it and see, like, if I reword it this way, if I present it this way or do it differently this way. Because that's how I am right now with the joke that I'm working on, which is so hard too, thinking about, like, do it, like going to talk to Sure Thing about recording an album. Because I'm like, yeah, okay, I got to scope. I got to kick back into gear, like bringing, like rewriting some of those old jokes, but just like remembering them to put them out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this, going back to when your timeline for making this happen, if we, and I want to talk about it more, because I want to hold you accountable, Barry.
Please do.
I want this dream to come true. What, if we go this Friday and it looks great and we can pull this off, what are we talking? We talking July?
I think if the soonest I would want to do it is August. I've got a couple more opportunities to do the full 45, at least on my calendar. So I can go in and say, all right, I'm going to do my album set. I'm going to do 50 minutes. I'm going to do, maybe I'll, you know, there's about 10 or 15 that I don't really need to do anymore, but I can do the 45 in order and make sure that works.
Who's opening? Who's featuring? I mean, you got to warm the crowd up, right? Same thing.
Yeah. Well, I'll probably end up doing an hour, but I don't know that I will use the full hour. It'll probably be a 50-minute album.
Do you think you want the show to be a whole show? If you're like, when Joe Bates recorded his album, it was just like a host and then him.
That's it. Yeah, I'd probably have like a 10-minute opener. I mean, it might be Andy, Allen Adams, just whatever, somebody. And that's the weird thing is I think the thing I'm worried most about, other than people showing up, is who am I going to ask to open and not offend or upset the rest of my friends?
Oh, you know what I mean? No, but I don't think you're, but I think you have to. Yeah, that's people being petty. But I think it's like, one, yeah, because like, you thought it would be offensive to ask Andy to open for you. I'm like, no, Andy would totally get Andy, what you
would
want.
No.
You mean like, oh, because I didn't ask.
Because I didn't ask so and so or so and so instead, because we're all good friends and they book me and stuff, right?
But it's also, but the other half of that, but that is, I got to put this in. But the other half of that, I think, is like, they should, I don't think any of them should rightfully get offended, because they know that you're just trying to have the best show you possibly can, because that's forever. It's like a tattoo.
Yeah.
You don't just let any of your friends do it. You know what I mean? Because that's going to be the effect in the long run. And especially if you pick someone like Andy, who's going to argue that you shouldn't have picked Andy? You know what I
mean? That's true. Yeah. That's the thing. So I think, honestly, Christopher, to answer your question, it's I think I would probably, the opener, I think I could, it would probably be Huggins, right? Which would be a huge honor for me, to have a friend, a mentor and a legend, do that. Right. And then it's going to be about now, you know, picking a date. And I think the set's done. So then the big thing is finding the, who's going to do the recording, like the engineering, how's that going to work? Who am I going to find that can come out, set up the mics, do the recording, make sure we have backups. And so that's the next part of it. And, you know, and then there's the editing and the post.
It's a lot of people that
it's a lot of work. What's that?
I'd say Chris knows a lot of people that do reporting.
It'd be something to explore.
Barry, do you also want to do video at the same time, or do you just want to focus on the audio?
So funny you mentioned that.
I'm a comic. stupid, I'm sorry.
No, the guy that produces the TV show that I'm on, they have a production company, and he approached me and he goes, "Hey, have you ever thought about when you record your album, just recording a special?" And I mean, you know this, Dusty. I was like, no,
but you know
that's
what,
so
though?
Pretentious. I'm nobody.
You know what's also weird?
No one wants to see a special from.
Yeah, but the weird thing is like, what's the difference at this point? Because like the thing, like the way I think it is you cut, you use that, you don't do it as like a special, but maybe you cut your bits. Oh, you stop. That's my dog. You cut your bits into YouTube clips. So you have those clips that you can throw out. One, just for real, but also
Andrew
like
Schultz style.
But just put them on YouTube for people to watch different clips, because sometimes, everybody Instagram. Doesn't want to watch your full hour special, but maybe they do want to share around 5-10 minutes of your set that they thought was really funny. You know what I mean? Like, I just think like, don't,
but
like,
he's
you have
talking
the opportunity.
About, he's like, well, so we'll bring in our production company. We'll produce it. We're talking 5-camera shoot. We'll do this. We'll market it. We'll do social media. We'll put that behind it. Cause they have
How
right
much?
Now, they have a lot of
that
TV.
Sounds awful.
They have a lot of TV inventory that they would push they would run commercials for the special.
Nice.
And I'm like, God, that's so, but Dusty, you know me, like, I'm not that guy. Like, I believe you gotta pay your dues. You gotta earn your special. Like, I feel kind of like an a-hole for recording an album. I'm like, who am I to go record an album? I just want to get this done.
I get that, but I think that that's a lot of like the old school dudes in you.
Yes.
Not about the,
you know that,
the dudes that just, the dudes that create their own opportunity, because you look at like the dudes who started the secret group. Everybody didn't think that they paid their dues. You know what I mean? You look at me starting Rudyard. How many of the old comics were like, fuck this bitch. Oh my God. I'm so sorry, Chris. I'm sorry. But like, how many of the old comics were like, this shouldn't be a mic, you know, this, you, whatever. Like same thing they said about Kevin Farron and Joe Bates. And it's, sometimes it's like, you got to just kill tradition and create your own opportunity. You know, like if you want to make the sports
forge
metaphor, how many
path.
People, like how many rants in the beginning did you hear old white men who were probably racist talking about why Tiger Woods didn't deserve a spot, when it's like, but he's good. What do you like? Yeah. What do you want him to do? Wait around to be older, to be good.
Yeah.
You know? So I think like sometimes it's about like taking the opportunity, embracing it. And who cares what people say you did or didn't deserve? If people are watching the special and they're consuming it, then let that speak.
That's
to people.
The other part though.
What if
no one watches?
Same, bro.
If nobody buys my album, nobody's gonna know, right? Like, if nobody goes to iTunes and buys my album, there's no numbers
sure
you're gonna
thing
see.
Was I talking about like all
the like
push
I sold
me,
nine
I like,
albums? No one's gonna know that. But if I put that bad boy on YouTube, I'm like, oh, like I'm Mark Norman or Sarah Tolomash, who's got a great special out. And I'm like, here's my special. And it's got 90 views. Oh, kill me now.
I want to sell my DVDs at shows. But that's why I say instead of, I think instead of using it as like a special, like I said,
cut it up.
Using it so that you can get reach, because you can just, people will share the parts they like. And not every, like, honestly, like I don't even watch people's full specials anymore, because I'm just like, I just can't. I mean, comedy has sort of ruined me in that way, where I'm just like, I can't take this much of you. I'll watch 10 minutes and I'll watch 10 minutes later.
I think
the
average is about 30 minutes now, right? Like, so even though we record for an hour, most people tap out 30 minutes in. So
the best 30.
It makes more sense to do the best 30. But at the very least, let's say you do two sets. Let's say you record it and you release 30 of it, the best 30, and then the last 30 are cut up into clips for YouTube, little edible bites to help promote the main 30, then you know what I mean? Like, you've got, it's going to be, no matter what.
But also, what about the clips promoting the album itself?
That's what I'm saying. It's like,
I would set up my own camera. I'd have the audio, because I do that all the time now in clubs. I have a lav mic. Right.
I want your special to just be shot from an iPhone on a tripod in the corner on like a
flip
on
phone,
a chair that you literally ask someone, is anyone sitting here? And like set it up.
What reso did you show? Oh, it's 640 by 480.
When Ashton was doing, would do his sets at Rudyard's, he would always put up his cell phone as a camera. And Victor and I would always look up pictures of penises on our phones and then just put it in front of this camera as he was doing his set.
That's so great. Yeah.
Well, listen,
that's a great way to shoot a special. What if you did a special and just had just people that? Do that? He's just coming.
That's outstanding.
That's how it's you like, knew how to cut the jokes. Like that's when you knew you were at the
punchline. This is an interactive. This is an interactive special with visuals, and then just have them randomly just. Oh, that would be funny.
They can vote in the comments. Did you like the first one, the second one, the third one?
So, give the people your socials, where people can find you. This hour flew by way faster than I could have possibly expected. It's great to catch up with you guys. Where can people find you, Dusty? We'll start with you.
At Lady Apron. That's a like at LadyApron, like the apron, on Instagram. And then like, mostly just that you can go to my, if you want to go to my website, it's www.ladyapron.com as well. Where you can see like clips and stuff, as well.
I'm super easy to find everything, whether TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, whatever is Barry is funny. I've managed to keep it all the same. So whatever platform you're on, you want to follow me on at Barry is funny. Just make sure you spell Barry with an A, not an E. Don't be a jerk. Nobody spells their first name Berry. So Barry is fine.
Thank you both for coming. I love you to death. And
thanks for having me.
See you next Tuesday. And Dusty, I'll see you later.
All right. Bye, guys.
Cheers. Bye.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.